Queer Words, conversation with queer-identified writers about their works and lives. Welcome to Queer Words. This is Wayne Goodman, and on this episode, I have the delightful pleasure of conversing with Natasha Dennerstein. Hello, Natasha.
Hi, Wayne.
You want to tell a little about yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm Australian, as you can probably hear from my accent. And I came to San Francisco because I wanted to have a trip abroad. I still had an overseas trip left in me. My plan was to do my MFA in creative writing in San Francisco and stay for 3 years. But that was like 5 years ago.
Okay. This is Queer Words. Mm-hmm. I like to ask people, what qualifies you as queer?
I think that I am dyed-in-the-wool, lifetime, card-carrying, gold member queer. And why I say this is, look, at 13 or 14, I was born male and I was having gay intimate relationships and was cross-dressing and a drag queen. And then I later turned into a trans woman. I was never really binary and straight with it all. I was always a little bit ambiguous gender-wise and sexuality-wise. And I'm mature now, so it's been my whole life has been as a queer / trans woman.
Okay, so I think you've answered this, but I'll ask again. When did you first accept being queer?
I thought maybe at 16 or 17 that I might have been a gay boy, but I did drag and dressed up. It was something that I put away and took back up and put away and took back up until I got to a point where I thought that the only way I could live my life would be as a female. But that came to me a bit later in my early 20s. But I would say that at 16...
I would imagine today it'd be even easier because gender fluidity is more accepted and younger people, even grade school children, are dealing with their gender issues.
And yes, they are. And sometimes quite controversially because the parents have the option to put them on puberty blockers and some people say that that's a form of child abuse.
Well, we'll save that for another discussion.
Okay.
So who are some of your queer hero figures?
In general, queer heroes and sheroes. I have to say Harvey Milk, not only for San Francisco, but for the whole world. I'm an admirer of some of the people in the media at the moment. Laverne Cox comes to mind as a trans woman with a high profile, speaking articulately about our issues and people like that. I also like that woman, Delaria, that's on Orange is the New...
Leah Delaria?
Yes.
Okay. Right. She's from San Francisco.
Yes.
She used to be a commentator. Yes.
I just like her because she's a butch lesbian that's in the media unashamedly herself. People like that I like. Visible right. People.
Okay. Yeah. Now we'll shift to who are some of your literary influences.
I have to say Leslie Feinberg first and foremost because of the book Stone Butch Blues, which is just a magnificent book. And it really changed my life and it's changed a lot of people's lives.
How did it change your life?
She was the first person to talk about trans or gender non-conforming issues in a way that was intelligent and sensitive and literary. Now, that book came out in 1992. Previously to that, trans characters in literature and other media were always portrayed as a joke or a punchline or a comedy or...
The murderer.
Yes, the murderer. They were often murdered.
The murderer who then got killed. I'm thinking of that fashion movie.
Dressed to Kill?
Dressed to Kill, yes.
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 Those kind of characters.
Yes.
But the first instance of trans characters being written sympathetically and intelligently was Leslie's book, and it was world-changing. Well, for us trans folk.
What inspired you to begin writing?
As a school kid, the only thing I was really good at was English. And in Australia, we had English expression and English literature. And those two subjects, one was reading and the other one was writing, I guess, or composition. And I got very high marks for those subjects. and very low marks for the others, just because it interested me, fascinated me. I loved reading Shakespeare and classic books and Tolstoy and Flaubert and all the things that they set us to read. I loved it, and analysing texts, and it just came naturally to me. And I always wanted to be a writer, and I always thought I was a writer. But then life intervened and I had to support myself and survive. I dabbled a bit, but I put it away until later in life when I had the time and the fortitude to be disciplined to sit down and write. It was always with me, but it lay dormant. And many years later, I got the opportunity to start writing.
Well, I know Anatomize as your first book that, yes, that I'm familiar with. Was there anything before that? Or did you just pop out of the box with this amazing award-winning book?
I was writing short stories and vignettes, and I was, you know, in my many years of life as a psychiatric nurse, I fictionalized little stories because there were so many fascinating stories. I'd write little one-page or two-page short stories. At that time, I read a lot of psychiatric fiction or fiction by people with backgrounds in psychology and psychiatry, and I wrote these small snippets and kept them aside.
Like character studies?
Little stories.
Yeah.
I guess they're fictionalized case studies.
Okay. And how does queerness impact your writing?
I think that it affects everything that you say and do, and it affects the atmosphere or the weather of your writing. I think that it was previously thought that queer literature had queer subject matters and queer characters, and it often does, but not always. It's my strong belief that the queerness expresses itself in my writing and in other queer writers that I know and like, in a certain way of looking at the world, a certain way of expressing oneself, a certain attitude. That's what I think.
Okay. Well, can you discuss your personal approach to writing? Like, do you have a pattern that you follow?
Yes. I find it best to wake up early and write early in the morning for a number of reasons. One is that it's quiet. There aren't a lot of people running around, especially at 6 a.m. And another thing is because I'm a caregiver in my relationship with my disabled partner, so he's asleep. So I get up early when he doesn't want oatmeal and where's my cigarette lighter, etc., etc. So I get up early. Those hours are my hours, the golden hours, from 6 a.m. till 9 a.m. And I usually write pretty steadily at that time almost every day, and have done so for years now. Also, the other thing, I've got this notion that if I go to bed thinking about what I'm going to write the next morning, it might percolate in my mind overnight and come out fully formed. I don't think that's ever happened.
Oh,
it's a theory I have.
I thought you were going to say you like to write when you first get up because you remember all the dreams. And
no,
you
but I do deliberately think as I'm trying to go to sleep of the plot of the novel that I'm writing or of the themes of the poem that I'm working on, hoping to do some subconscious mental work during the night. Also, in the morning, my mind is not distracted with a whole lot of other things. So when I sit down, I'm pretty fluid in the mornings.
Okay. Well, can you tell us a little bit about your body of work?
As you mentioned, I had Anatomize come out in 2014 or 15, I think it was. And that was a book of poetry. I'm very proud of that book because I deliberately wanted to make it universal. And that's what all humans have in common, the body. And I thought that can be related. I really didn't want to come out with a super queer or super trans collection. I had that stuff in me, but I thought later. I just didn't want to pigeonhole myself as a trans writer because I knew what would happen. I'd have a very small following, and I just wanted to be more universal. And how much more universal can you be than the human body? And so I'm very, very proud of that book. I think it's a successful collection, and I mined my own knowledge of anatomy and physiology from my background in nursing to come up with interesting little things about every system in the human body.
Well, there is one poem in the book that is, I would say, almost specifically talking to the gay community. That's O Positive.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, I believe you're right. They're not shaded one way or the other. It's just people's bodies and how they express them.
Well, that particular poem is an AIDS poem, and I was in the blood section and thinking about the method of transmission of HIV. And also the way in which the progress of the bloodborne disease I think that non-queer people or hetero people can relate to that too, because addicts were getting HIV back then, and even straight women were getting it.
And so your other books?
Well, then after that was Triptych Caliform, which was a collection in three segments, cinema, BDSM / kink, and the Californian lifestyle. It's really because I was acclimating myself to living here in the Bay, and there was a lot of new things for me. And I always associate California with Hollywood and the movie industry. And then all those sort of peculiar lifestyles and ways of thinking about the world tied in with all of that. I guess it's my transition novel from Australia to America, really, through the filter of California. I like the title, Caliform. It's not really a word, it's a neologism, but like formed from California.
Yeah. And again, yeah, it doesn't lean towards any particular community. It's for everyone. There's something for everyone in the book.
I hope so. I'm an equal opportunity offender. Everyone can be offended.
Yes. And then?
And then about a girl, which is a novel in verse, or you could say it's a novella in verse. I mean, there's a narrative thread through it with a storyline and characters written from a variety of perspectives. And that book also leaned heavily on my psychiatric nursing background. And so many of the sad and broken young women I looked after over the years with their alcoholism, eating disorders, addictions, bulimia, their stories of sexual assault and the ramifications of that, how that affects you, as it does very much everyone later in life. So that was that book, and I was very happy with that. And those three were all from Norfolk Press. And then I came out with a chapbook, which is Seahorse. That's from Nomadic Press, and that's a little kind of trans story in poems. I've got four poetry books currently in print, and I've got a novel coming soon.
Well, where can people find your books?
The chapbook, Seahorse, is available through SPD, Small Press Distributors in Berkeley. You can order it online or by mail. And the other books from Norfolk Press, you can get them from norfolkpress.com.
Great.
And they're in different bookstores.
And they're around the world, as we've seen them in Auckland and Melbourne.
Yeah, Hares and Hyenas, yes. Fitzroy.
So would you like to share some readings with us?
Sure. Let me read Non, Je ne regrette rien from Seahorse. There's an epigraph from Adrienne Rich. I'll read that first before the poem. If you are trying to transform a brutalized society into one where people can live in dignity and hope, you begin with the empowering of the most powerless. You build from the ground up. And this is the poem. There's nothing sadder than someone who's had genital surgery and regrets it, because you can't unring a bell. The first cut is the deepest and all that, but lucky for me, I love being a woman. Despite a lifetime of treatment as a second-class citizen and being deemed not to be authentic enough, although feeling very authentic, as if there can be degrees of authenticity. You know, the French call us femme synthétique, plastic women. And I don't mind, because they say if you can't have children, then you're not really something something. But who cares? It's the price you pay. And you can't have it all, but you can. You can. Would I undo anything? Hell no. I'm a trans bitch and straddle the world of gender, and therefore have special knowledge, special powers. I can cross my legs like a woman while folding my arms like a man.
Okay.
It's a funny little piece.
All right. Some others?
Here's one from Triptych Caliform, from the cinema section. How on the silver screen of her dream, matinee idols and cloaks of darkness swoop down like bats and do unspeakable things to hapless maidens in gowns of velvet, curtains and pelmets. How warriors in helmets, sandals and swords wreak terrible vengeance. How gods are invoked. How she manages to be ravaged just out of frame. How cads are to blame. The evidence hovering in the corner, ripped bodice, discarded scarf, dropped suede glove, bottle of hard liquor lying on its side, contents leaked like tears. how she pursues those bad, bad boys, those laconic mechanics, those hardworking farmhands, those dapper gents and sure-footed dancing princes, those articulate diplomats and sons of captains of industry. How she settles for chain-smoking clerks, unemployed drag racers and actors working as waiters. How they usually leave when the going gets rough. How she wonders if there is something wrong with her. How she is suddenly 30, then even more suddenly 40. How the squalls of babies drive her mad. How the smell of diapers makes her sick. How she ends up semi-comatose, Xanaxed in front of the TV, watching Ellen and Turner Classic reruns of Pretty Lady. And how she wonders what the hell happened to her life. It's a feminist poem of sorts. Any more?
Please, all you want.
Here's one from About a Girl, the novella in verse. It's called Red Wine Lake. Slide the safety razor across your skin. Watch it draw a red line like sketching with a corpuscle pen. Then feel the release. Inflict the pain. You do 5 decent cuts, then wrap them tight. Oh no! This time it's too deep. The blood is welling, dripping down to the elbow, pooling onto the floor, and it won't stop, can't stop. There's a red wine lake, and you hear an ambulance wail. Who called it? You wake up to disinfectant, neon, watch a white coat sew you up like a stuffed toy. Listen to her admonish you. You're in a wheelchair. Register an illuminated sign, psychiatric admissions. Questions, pills, white tea, white toast, strawberry jam, green pajamas, stiff sheets. And you say, I wasn't trying to kill myself, so why am I in a nut house? Don't call my husband, you say. Don't call my mother, you say. Don't call my sister, you say. Call me. Call me. Call me girl. And finally, from Anatomize, articulated. Underneath me walks a skeleton, jointed at elbows and knees, acetabulum, olecranon process. She is an X-ray girl, X-rated, but clothed in meat, skin, hair. She sits, she jumps, she twirls. Sometimes she stands on tiptoe. Her bones are strong like whalebone. Her skull is hard as ivory. Her bones clatter down together, vertebra, intercostals, like bracelets on a socialite's arm of wood, of bone, of horn, of metal, embellished with jewels. Beneath my living surface jangle my bones, waiting for their time to lay themselves down to rest.
How interesting that you chose that one, because my review of that book is titled, She Had Me at Acetabulum.
I know.
Good choice.
It was a nod to your good taste.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. What is your involvement in the queer communities?
I like to see myself in the trans community as a trans sister or an elder, because I've got 30 years experience of being a trans woman, and in some ways that qualifies you for nothing, but in other ways it makes you the repository of a whole lot of social history and also the owner of some skills of survival. And these are gifts I can pass on to the younger members. I don't want to be one of those people that retires into obscurity and scuttles away never to be heard of again. I want the difficulties I've gone through in my life to mean something. So as I mature, Wayne, and hear the clock ticking, I think let this not all have been in vain. So I have a strong need to give back and share, and also in the trans context, be visible, because it's important. Young people say, oh, you know, when I heard so-and-so, when I saw so-and-so, it gave me the strength to also come out or to transition or what have you. So I think that I have a responsibility to my younger community members. I'm not like the crocodile that eats her young.
Okay. How do you use social media to promote your work?
I do that. I want people to be aware of my work and I want people to buy my books. But I can't have a constant stream of advertisements saying, here's my new book, buy my book, because why would people? So what I do is I like to post articles and images on popular culture, the history of fashion and film and vehicles, things that I'm passionate about that I think are beautiful. And I sort of create or curate, in my mind anyhow, a visual magazine and pepper it occasionally with plugs for my book. But I do try and put snippets of verse with an accompanying image, for example. So the plug in itself is aesthetic, but it's about 10 pieces of interesting content and one plug for a book. That's about the formula. Like every second post I made was exhorting people to come to my readings and buy my books. It wouldn't work so much. People can tolerate it because it's amongst, I'm giving something. I'm asking something like, look at my work, buy my book. If you can't afford it, then please repost this so other people may see it. But in asking for that, I have to be giving something.
As a person who reads your posts, I will say most of the time it's like going to a curated art exhibit.
Terrific.
And that's how I feel. You have a little bit of this, a little bit of style, a little bit of kitsch, a little bit of art, and it's wonderful to see every day. Thank you.
Thank you.
So what do you like to read?
A lot of stuff. I'm a very wide and promiscuous reader. Years ago, I read an article by Ray Bradbury. He was a brilliant writer and brilliant teacher. He passed away now. And he said, next to my bed, I have a book of verse poetry. I have a collection of essays, always changing. And I have a book of fiction. Every night I try to read a poem, an essay, and some chapters of a fiction, because it's food for the brain and constantly filling the brain with the rhythms of those different forms. And I agree with him. I get a lot from reading essays. Even though I'm not a practitioner of the essay, I see the rhythm of the prose and the way the ideas circle back to where they start, and there's sort of foreshadowing, and it's like a piece of music. Reading good essays helps me in my writing. And, you know, I love poetry, so I'm always reading a current book of poetry. And I read novels as well. I make sure, I haven't read one for a while, I'll start a new one.
Do you have any words of wisdom to pass along to other queer writers?
Yes, I do. Yes, write for your community and perform in your community, but also don't hem yourself in. Reach out to straight people and other communities too, and read in environments that aren't exclusively queer, and broaden your scope. Include subjects and characters that aren't specifically queer. I mean, we're allowed to write about straight people. It's not like we're only being quarantined in the gay part of the world. That's what I think, because then you'll broaden your scope and your practice.
Well, thank you very much, Natasha Dennerstein.
Thank you.